DW Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Abubakar Jallo.
And I am Assumpta Latus. And coming up on the program, Tunisia's President Beji Caid Essebsi dies after almost 5 years in office.
I would like to value what President Beji Caid Essebsi has done in building the independent state and then in being the president of the state in the last 5 years.
And police in the German state of Hessen describes the shooting of an Eritrean man as xenophobic.
Regarding the possible motive for the crime, we are currently working on the assumption of a very clear xenophobic motive, that the person was chosen randomly but also deliberately because of his skin color.
These are just some of the stories we have lined up for you.
But first, here's a chance to listen to the main stories around the world.
DW News.
I'm Kaid Ambak with the DW News. Tunisian President Beji Caid Essebsi has died after an illness. He was 92. Essebsi was Tunisia's first democratically elected leader and came to power in 2014 following the Arab Spring. The country has declared 7 days of mourning. The head of parliament will take over as interim president. A presidential election scheduled for November is to be brought forward by several weeks. In his first full day as British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson told Parliament the UK will leave the European Union by the October 31st deadline, even if the EU does not change the deal in place.
If they do not, we will of course have to leave without an agreement under Article 50. The UK is better prepared for that situation than many believe. But we are not as ready yet as we should be. In the 98 days that remain to us, we must turbocharge our preparations to make sure that there is as little disruption as possible to our national life.
Michel Barnier, chief EU negotiator for the UK leaving the European Union, called Johnson's demands unacceptable. International aid organization Action Against Hunger has appealed for help to secure the release of 6 aid workers who are being held by suspected Islamist terrorists in northern Nigeria. The 6, who are all Nigerian nationals, were abducted last week after an attack on their convoy. The Islamic State West Africa Province, a splinter group of Boko Haram, released a video showing the captured aid workers. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees says dozens of migrants are feared dead after the boat they were on capsized off the Libyan coast. Up to 150 migrants are missing and 137 were rescued by the Coast Guard about 120 kilometers east of the capital Tripoli. Rights groups have said that those who are rescued and taken back to Libya are at the mercy of armed groups or filthy detention centers without adequate food and water. In South Africa, Johannesburg City Power was the victim of a ransomware attack Thursday, leading to widespread blackouts. The company tweeted that a virus encrypted all of its databases, applications, and network. It did not say where the origin of the attack was or if any demands had been made. Johannesburg City Power was working to restore power throughout the day. Europe is cooking under its second heat wave this summer. Thursday marked the second consecutive day Germany saw a record high temperature as the thermometer hit 41.5 degrees Celsius in the state of Lower Saxony. Paris saw the mercury rise to 42.4 degrees, 2 degrees hotter than the previous record in 1947. Temperatures are expected to fall Friday and Saturday. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kaid Ambak.
And if you are just joining us, this is DW's Africa Link. My name is Abubakar Jallo.
And I am Assumpta Latus. And we are live on our Facebook page, which is DW Africa. Talking about Facebook page, you know that you can always drop us a comment and we will read it at any time you
Absolutely.
Want. And we would like to say hello to one of our listener, our favorite listener for today is Tape Linus Gagbi. You're saying you are watching or listening this from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, now let's go right into our story. Tunisia's president has died at the age of 92 after almost 5 years in office. He is a champion of women's rights. He helped usher in a stable transition to democracy. Yet, the end of his rule was overshadowed by several deadly attacks and political disputes.
Beji Caid Essebsi may have had limited powers under the constitution, but he will likely be remembered as a stabilizing force during a tumultuous period in Tunisia history and praised for advancing women's rights. Susan Holton with more.
President Beji Caid Essebsi was elected president of Tunisia in December 2014, completing a democratic transition in the country after the uprising of 2010 and 11. He won a presidential runoff with almost 56% of the vote against outgoing president and rights activist Moncef Marzouki. At the time, Essebsi vowed to be a president for all Tunisians.
I swear by Almighty God to preserve the independence of Tunisia and its territorial integrity, to respect its constitution and its laws, to look after its interests and be loyal to her.
His passing comes during a time of renewed uncertainty for the country, as a series of intra-party disputes have dominated the political scene in the past year. Concerns over a potential power vacuum ahead of November polls remain. Tunisia's constitution, adopted in 2014, provides for two measures in the case of a power vacuum. The prime minister can take over the president's responsibilities for a period of no more than 60 days. If the vacancy is longer, the Speaker of Parliament is tasked with the role for up to 90 days. Mohamed Ennasser is Tunisian president of the Assembly of the Representatives of the People.
I would like to value what President Beji Caid Essebsi has done in building the independent state and then in being the president of the state in the last 5 years. In this occasion, I would like to remind that the state will continue, and according to the Tunisian constitution, the head of parliament will act as the interim president of the republic.
President Essebsi often claimed with pride that it was the overwhelming support of Tunisian women that propelled him to power in 2014. Women in Tunisia won relatively broad rights under Bourguiba decades ago, and many feared an Islamist wave would threaten those freedoms.
Susan Holton with that report on the death of the Tunisian leader.
And we do have comments on this story. And the first one is from you, Hugo Paulinos. You're saying, may his soul rest in peace. Amen.
Willie Efouanye says, he may not have been the perfect leader Tunisians would have wished to have, but he was a man like we all, and by his human nature, an imperfect human being.
Very wise.
Indeed, there. Now, let's take you to another story that is real in Germany. Police in the state of Hessen believe there was a racist motive in the shooting of a 26-year-old Eritrean in the central German town of Wächtersbach. The suspected shooter fled the scene, and a few hours later, police found his apparently lifeless body in a car in the neighboring town of Bibergemünd. The man was taken to the local hospital where he was pronounced dead.
A chief prosecutor at the office of the Attorney General in Frankfurt, Alexander Badley, called the attack xenophobic but denied any right-wing or extremist background. The xenophobic attack has angered some Germans due to the news coverage it received. Crispin Makideo has more.
An opinion piece in the Cologne Daily newspaper described the attack on a 26-year-old Eritrean man as a shift of the boundary of tolerance in Germany. The article described how the suspected shooter entered his usual bar in the small town of Bibergemünd in Hessen. He talked about how he was going out to shoot a refugee. He actually went out to the next village and allegedly shot the Eritrean refugee. He returned to the bar and bragged about his action before he allegedly went to his car and shot himself. No one in the bar attempted to call the police and report the man. The chief prosecutor at the office of the Attorney General in Frankfurt, Alexander Badl, described the attack as xenophobic.
Regarding the possible motive for the crime, we are currently working on the assumption of a very clear xenophobic motive, that the person was chosen randomly but also deliberately because of his skin color as the victim to be by the presumed shooter.
Auch was die Motivation der Tat angeht, in alle Richtungen erstrecken werden.
The attack drew very little attention in the local media, while people's attentions were mostly focused on the current heatwave, the opinion piece in the Cologne Daily newspaper says. According to Badl, the 26-year-old seems to have been a random victim. He said that the two semi-automatic guns, as well as other weapons found in the shooter's car, were all owned legally. The motive behind the perpetrator's suicide was still unknown. The unnamed Eritrean man was taken to a hospital, but he's in stable condition, local media reported.
Crispin Makideo with that report. And now to another story, which is actually also making headlines on the continent. A woman aid worker who was abducted in the northeastern Nigeria last week has called on the federal to secure her release and six of her colleagues. The group of aid workers was traveling to Damasak in Borno State when members of the Islamic State in West African province ISWAP, a splinter group of Boko Haram, kidnapped them.
Now, the aid workers were working for the international NGO Action Against Hunger. There are fears that if the government fails to intervene, the aid workers might be killed, as in the case of Hawa Liman, who was recently murdered by the same group because no ransom was paid. Alamin Mohammed reports.
Thursday last week, Country Director Action Against Hunger, Shashwat Sarab, reported that a vehicle belonging to the organization was ambushed by an armed group 15 kilometers away from Damasak town, with some of the occupants reportedly abducted. He said one of the staff of the humanitarian organization was killed by the attackers, while six others are missing. Yesterday, one of the aid worker named Grace appeared in a video believed to have released by insurgents, appealing to the government to save her life and other colleagues.
I want to beg on Christian Association of Nigeria, because I'm the only Christian among the six of us here. Please do something about me to see how I can be released. I begged Action Against Hunger. We have families, some of us have children. I begged that Nigerian government do something to see that we are released.
Citing example with what happened to Hawa Liman and other aid workers abducted by the same group, Grace sought intervention.
This has occurred before in this organization, Red Cross. Some ladies were caught. They also asked to be released. But because Nigeria did not do anything about it, they were killed. That please, Nigeria should not allow such to happen to us.
NGOs have increasingly been targeted by jihadists. Two female aid workers with the International Committee of Red Cross, ICRC, were murdered by ISWAP last year, and an aid worker with the UN Children Agency, UNICEF, is still being held by the group. Families of the abducted aid workers urge federal government and all concerned agencies to do everything possible to secure their release. Falmata Muhammad, mother of three, is the wife of Ali Kiari, one of the abductees.
Please let them release him. For me, he's the only person I have now. I lost my parents. Who's going to take care of me and three of our children? Please and please, I pleaded with the abductors in the name of God to release him.
Alamin Mohammed with that very sad story. But Abu, to talk about sad stories, one of the stories that people are not talking about here in Germany is the shooting of the Eritrean.
This is something that is really uncommon in Germany, a country that we know this would normally be a huge thing. But right now, of course, everyone is talking about the extreme heat waves, which has hit 42 degrees. And everyone is like, what?
Well, it's not normal. I mean, 42 degrees, you know, you can't even walk the normal way. it's like, you know, slagging and yeah.
We understand, but I mean, this is the death of someone who was shot on a broad daylight by a German who bragged about it as well in the bar. And this, it doesn't happen often in Germany, we have to say. Anyways, these are some of your, keep your comments coming on our page, DW Africa.
We're back. In case you have just tuned in, this is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Assumpta Latus.
And I am Abu Bakar Jalo. As usual, we live on Facebook. Our address is DW Africa.
And coming up in the next 15 minutes, young people in Malawi are having a hard time finding accommodation.
There's a danger when you have a young person who is unmarried getting into your house. If they are men or boys, they can bring some drunkards in the house.
Stay with us only for a little while to find out why landlords in Malawi are refusing to let places rent to young people. But first, many young people are reeling under the pressure of having to support themselves and their extended families. In South Africa, this is called black tax. And in Nigeria, it does not have a specific name, but many young professionals know when it means when it is payday.
The money that most of these youngsters earn must feed their parents, siblings, and even extended families. In a country lacking functional social welfare coverage, surviving means turning to the young generation. DW's Fanny Fachar met a Nigerian who is putting his life on hold to take care of his parents and siblings. Her report is now presented by Mimi Mepo.
In a predominantly working-class neighborhood in Lagos, Nigeria, Olabanji Solomon is getting set for work. The 29-year-old's 5-square-meter room is close to his salon, which specializes in manicure and pedicure. It is rainy season, but business is slow. But that doesn't stop relatives from reaching out for help, so Olabanji can't afford to lose clients.
I get a message from my sister about her daughter's school fees. You understand? So they asking me for money of their hair, of their clothes. I would never do that. But for their kids to go to school, yeah, it's fine.
About half of his salary goes to his sister, his father, and other relatives. This form of income sharing is common in Nigeria. In many black communities, this is called black tax. Without a functioning social welfare system, many young people become their family's sole source of income. To Olabanji, it is a situation hard to deal with.
I dislike it, I don't like it, but you trying to stop it, it will just be as if you're a bad person. But deep in me, I know it's not supposed to be like that.
On his way to work, Olabanji visits his father who lives alone. He lost his job a few years ago, but thanks to his son, he has a warm meal today, jollof rice. Without his son's support, Boyo Olukun says he wouldn't survive.
I called him, he answered me, answered me.
I should not go too much into his purse because he is planning his own life too.
He's planning his own life too.
In order to save money, Olabanji needs 3 to 4 clients a day. But today, there has been only one. Not enough to get ahead. He thinks the government needs to support the youth.
We're not gonna enjoy our youth because of too much of a responsibility. So I think the government have to find something to do to that, so we can grow and achieve our aims.
Until then, Olabanji and others like him would have to continue supporting their families while putting their own lives on hold.
TW Fanny Fajar's report narrated by Mimi Mefo. Abu, how many times do you send money back home?
I wouldn't get it. It's a bit of a personal issue, but honestly, this story really touches me.
It really does. I mean, I think it touches every single person. I mean, African
Yeah, especially if you live in Europe like we do, huh?
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get your comments there. It's, that's why we're here, not our opinion.
Right. Yeah. And Imran Bojang, you're saying, yes, I would do that at any time because I am proud, or we are proud, to carry the burden of our elders. They were there for us when we were young.
And that's in response to a question we asked on Facebook, whether should the youth who are just starting out on life have to carry the burden of the old? And get your Anthony says, in Africa, we don't send our aged old parents to nursing homes. Their children care for them. That is the tradition we practice.
And Arnold Empathy, you're saying laziness is part of the African culture. Even at this moment, some relative is about to give birth to a child for others to take care of. Oh, my.
Yeah, thanks for those comments. I hope we have some time to get back to some of your responses there.
U-Zone.
Now, in search for greener pastures, many young people risk their lives attempting to reach Europe. In 2018, this is according to the International Organization for Migration, over 3,000 migrants went missing or died trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea.
This year so far, that number is a little bit higher. It's close to 1,500. But that has not stopped many young Sierra Leoneans who still see this journey as their last hope for a better life. Our correspondent in Freetown, Mutala Mohamed Kamara, in this report speaks with a university student who says the prospect of unemployment after school compelled him to embark on the journey.
Tijan Kuruma is a third-year social work student at the University of Sierra Leone. In April 2019, Kuruma abandoned his studies at the Furabe College of the University of Sierra Leone to embark on a journey across the Sahara to reach Europe. He did not succeed. He was arrested in Algeria and imprisoned for days, and then left stranded in the desert, few kilometers to Niger. The International Office of Migration facilitated his return to Sierra Leone. I went to visit him at his residence in the far east of the capital, Freetown, to find out on the reasons why a third-year student will abandon his course to go across the desert.
Okay. Hello, Hassan.
Hey, Mr. Mutala. How are you, sir?
I'm fine.
Yeah, you're welcome. Please have a seat.
Yeah, thank you.
Tijan now lives in a small room in an apartment. Inside the room, there is a small mattress on the floor with some books on a table with a few dresses. I met Tijan reading his notes. He has returned to his university and program. He tells me he is studying for his exam. I asked him what motivated him to embark on the journey across the Sahara.
The challenges faced way back as a student is quite not easy. It's very much frustrating. It's very much challenging. As a student, without no support, there are times no food, nothing absolutely to start your day with, so you go with empty stomach at the university.
The suffering coupled with the pressure from family members and the lack of jobs in the country pushed Tijan to embark on this journey. One of his sisters asked him to go with her, promising to pay his transport across the Sahara Desert. He was aware of the risk involved, but he was determined to better his life in Europe.
And as an elderly son coming from an extended family, everyone is looking at me, and I am racing towards time. I am pushing towards time. Time and tide wait for no man. That keep on motivating me. Haven't I seen those whom we call as an elder, graduated from the university, 4 or 5 years, no job, no employment. 4 or 5 years, you see, the life of them is the same. All those are motivation that keep on pushing me. Though I know the challenges, using the Sahara Desert is very much deadly.
On the journey, family members have lost loved ones across the desert. There is no proper available statistics of how many Sierra Leoneans that have lost their lives during this journey. Tijan explained about the lessons learned from his trip.
They locked us for about 15 days. Being that 15 days in that cell was the worst day in my life that I just don't think I will encourage or advise anyone to embark on such journey.
According to the United Nations Development Programme, 70% of young people in Sierra Leone remain unemployed, and many believe the high unemployment rate has pushed many young people to look for an alternative elsewhere. Sierra Leone went through a brutal civil conflict, which ended in 2002. Young people were involved in fighting alongside various warring factions. These former fighters were rehabilitated through a disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration program. But critics say the process did not reduce the burden of unemployment 17 years later.
Mutala Mohamed Kamara reporting there from Freetown. Asumpta as a Sierra Leonean, and I'm not shocked, but also quite angry somehow. Why do youngsters take the journey to come to Europe?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you just heard in the stories before there that most of our families back home don't really see that. Yeah. They just require you to send them money.
Well, the thing is, it's the motivation. I mean, people think that if you go to Europe, then you'll be able to take care of your siblings and your parents as well, which is sometimes it's a wrong motivation.
I hope that changes.
Speaking out.
Now to a human rights stories. In most African countries, Malawi inclusive, it is difficult for young people to find decent and affordable accommodation. And in most cases, there is a mismatch and disparities not only in the rental prices, but also in their income, among others.
And sometimes some people are discriminated just because they are young. Miriam Kaliza spoke to some young people in Malawi, and here is her report.
Jacqueline Ngongonda has been looking for an affordable apartment in Malawi's capital, Lilongwe, with no success. The 28-year-old says dealing with real estate agents is frustrating. They often demand money for every viewing, a burden mostly to young people who are just fresh university graduates.
I think it's very hard, and unfortunately most youths in Malawi don't have that money to make in a month. So it's very hard for them to go about to find houses that, especially in the cities, that are way beyond their pay slips or their paychecks. They end up living in places where it's not safe and the houses are not even comfortably to live in.
Jacqueline attributes the problem to the growing urbanization. Gender discrimination is also at play. Majority single women hardly get apartments and are subjected to rigorous screening. Pilian Gwejula is a landlord.
There's a danger when you have a young person who is unmarried getting into your house. If they are men or boys, they can bring some drunkards in the house. They can damage your house. If they are unmarried women or girls, they bring some chaos in your house just because of the friends, the relationships they have. They disturb your peace at the house. So most of us landlords, we don't want that.
In a country where the youth unemployment rate is at 25% and $20 minimum wage, many young people can barely afford a decent accommodation. However, Jacqueline, who earns around $300 per month, proposes the government to consider investing in housing.
I think the best way is if the government could really look into these housing projects that they are supposed to be doing. Because so far, since I can remember and since I was born, I haven't seen any houses being built to increase the ones that are already existing. And those have been lived in with by our parents.
The government of Malawi is aware of the challenges facing young people, but the spokesperson for the ministry in charge of housing says his office has been supporting private entities to construct affordable apartments.
We are addressing those things by engaging different partners. Government on its own cannot accomplish that. Top of that, we have Malawi Housing Corporation, which is also in very busy constructing houses to address the same challenge so that the youth can easily be accommodated within the cities.
In Malawi's major cities, many residents are unable to access decent rental homes due to high rental prices and lack of financing options, which lead to many of them living in informal settlements. Residents find themselves in overcrowded, unsanitary living conditions in slum settlements with limited or no access to clean water, affordable transport, education, energy, among others.
Miriam Kaliza reporting from Lilongwe. Asumta, I understand you want to say something.
Yeah, well, talking about young people, tomorrow we're going to have Michael Otieb hosting here together with you. And you have an opinion about Heatwave. Yeah, in Germany.
Yes, indeed. Over the last couple of hours, many people have been talking about the heat wave in Germany. But I am from Ghana. And every day in January, it's a heat wave. So, you know, you have to deal with it.
And we stop complaining about it.
We should stop complaining for sure. It's been a pleasure. My name is Abubakar
Jalo. And I'm Asum Talatu. Thank you very much for listening.
DW. Made for Mind.